Clark's Shoes has been, well, the soul of the little Somerset town of Street for just under 200 years. And a national fixture too, on British high streets.
They say this is the average boy. Average height, average weight. So he wears average size clothes.
Generations of British children have worn their footwear.
This is why at Clark's, we make children's shoes in half sizes and different widths. In our book, there is no such thing as an average child.
And for the people of Street, it was more than a shoemaker. Founded by Quakers, for two centuries Clark's had, they felt, put the welfare of its workers on a par with profit.
They were very much known to be a benevolent employer in the local area.
Adrian Axtell is a representative from the community union.
They've invested in providing such things as a swimming pool, for argument's sake, library, town hall, playing fields. And they've also supported their staff and the local community for many years. And that's borne out, Ben, by the fact that generations of families have worked at Clark's over the years.
But in 2021, something called private equity arrived to put the boot in. Now, Clark's, it should be stressed, was not the presence it had been in the 19th century. All its actual shoemaking had been offshored, mostly to Asia, where costs were lower. And a collapse in shoe sales during the pandemic had created a crisis of survival for the firm. It needed a buyer or it would go under. In March 2021, Hong Kong-based private equity firm Lion Rock Capital acquired full control of the business from the descendants of the Clark's family. And what did Lion Rock do? Attempt to fire and then rehire the workers at Clark's Somerset distribution centre on worse pay and inferior conditions.
What's going down now in the village of Street?
Before long, the workers voted to withdraw their labour.
But if they think they're gonna fire and rehire us, they're gonna find we're not as weak as they'd expect.
Those on strike say they feel upset and hurt after years of loyalty, being asked to sign new deals which would mean a 15 to 20% pay cut, the so-called fire and rehire policy.
The cuts that they are aiming to do to us are pretty much barbaric. It will mean a complete change in lifestyle for most people that we can't afford.
We are the worst, we're constructing for respect.
Adrian Axtell was in the room when the private equity firm's representative delivered the news in August 2021.
He was quite casually dressed, jeans and T-shirts and so on and so forth. So no, he wasn't what you'd probably say was your typical private equity guy. The tone was very much, this is what's going to happen, and you need to, as a union, agree to what we intend to do. If you don't, we're just going to press ahead with it. And so there was no, from my perspective, there was no attempt to try to negotiate, reach an alternative, compromise, anything like that at all.
He took the news to the workers.
It was a Sunday morning on one of the recreation parks. And we laid it out clearly what the position was with the organisation. People were aghast on their faces. They were incredibly angry. They really couldn't believe. It was probably disbelief that the organisation as such could do this to them when historically what they'd actually stood for well over 100 years.
Adrian heard about the impact on these workers firsthand.
One chap particularly was a carer for his father, yet felt so strongly about the position, was pretty much on the picket line every day of that dispute.
Francis, whose father worked at Clark's, hadn't had a day sick for 34 years, until the new terms and conditions were announced.
I've been off with depression because it just affected me. I collapsed one morning going into work. Just cracked my head open.
A local Somerset MP, one Jacob Rees-Mogg, was asked about these kind of corporate practices in the House of Commons.
Employers threatening to fire and rehire as a negotiating tactic are doing something that is wrong and decent employers do not do.
Was this, is this, private equity in action? Something beyond the pale even for an ardent free marketer like Jacob Rees-Mogg? Is its arrival something ordinary workers should fear? Or is private equity unfairly maligned? I'm Ben Chu, economics editor of BBC Newsnight, and this is what I'll be investigating on The Hidden Masters of the Universe. Private equity touches every part of our lives, from the cradle to the grave.
Private equity money has flooded the medical industry in recent years.
Two of the largest nursery chains in the UK are private equity owned. Same is true of three of the UK's biggest care home groups.
Large corporations and private equity firms are buying up veterinary offices at an alarming rate.
Half of the UK's veterinary practices are owned by just six companies, and three of them are private equity firms. From high street restaurant chains to supermarkets.
The supermarket giant Morrisons has accepted a takeover deal worth £6.3 billion from a...
To chemists, to dentists.
Thames Water, wholesale wastewater.
To water companies, to football clubs.
Roman Abramovich has completed the sale of Chelsea Football Club.
To even the music we listen to.
Justin Timberlake is cashing in on his music. Timberlake sold the rights to his song catalogue to a fund backed by Blackstone.
In almost every area of our lives, private equity is likely to be involved. The more you look around, the more you find it.
Kim Kardashian needs little introduction. And now, well, she's moving into the world of finance to launch her own private equity firm.
Private equity firm Ethical Capital Partners has acquired MindGeek, the owner of Pornhub.
To its critics, private equity is locust capitalism, barbarians at the gate. Financiers asset stripping and hollowing out good companies, screwing over workers.
What ends up happening is that these costs are shifted in the form of under resourcing services and exploiting workers.
To its defenders, it saves companies, improves how they're run, creates jobs, and makes the entire economy larger.
It's grown because it's been economically successful and people have chased success, no different than anything else in life.
To others, though, it's more a form of financial smoke and mirrors, a kind of trick played on us all.
The idea that somehow that a bunch of former investment bankers are magically good at identifying new revenue opportunities for companies just doesn't pass the smell test.
But for most, let's be honest, private equity is simply a mystery. Financial masters whose workings are hidden from our daily lives. So what is private equity? Perhaps the best way to think about this is to consider its opposite. You might be familiar with the concept of the public company, where a founder sells their stake in a firm to other investors. From there, the firm will often start issuing regular public updates on performance, with its shares trading daily on a stock market, available for anyone to buy and sell. Let's call this public equity. Private equity reverses this. Investors pool their money, and the private equity managers use these funds to buy publicly listed companies and remove them from these public stock markets. The theory is that these investors, away from the distractions and scrutiny of public stock markets, are set free to improve the company in various ways, making efficiencies, expanding sales, and then sell it back to public markets, usually 5 years down the line, for a tidy profit. But where did it come from? In the 1970s, private equity was a modest industry, turning around troubled, small-sized US manufacturing companies, often family-owned. Then in the 1980s, we saw the emergence of so-called leveraged buyouts, using mountains of borrowed money raised by high-interest junk bonds issued by Wall Street financiers to acquire much larger firms, publicly listed firms, which were often perfectly healthy, rather than in need of rescue.
Remember the 80s?
Money.
Yeah, right. Tons of it.
When greed was good.
All we want you to do is make us as rich as possible, Ross.
These raiders had their first burst of fame in 1986 when there was a vicious battle for control among them for the giant US food conglomerate RJR Nabisco. At the time, it was the biggest private equity deal ever, at $25 billion. And the tale was turned into a best-selling book and movie, Barbarians at the Gate.
He wants to buy out RJR Nabisco.
What?
He's got a plan.
I'm talking about putting a mountain of money into everybody's pocket right now.
And since then, it's got bigger and bigger and bigger. It's now estimated that on one measure, there's around $8 trillion in private equity funds and acquisitions around the world, managed by giant financial conglomerates you've most likely never heard of, like Blackstone, Apollo, KKR, Carlyle, TPG, CVC and Permira. 40 years ago, it was very rich people or wealthy institutions like top universities who invested in private equity. Now it's likely to be all of us, indirectly via our pension funds. The US and the UK, by the way, are two of the biggest markets for it.
They are huge. So 12 million people in the US work for a company that is owned by a private equity firm. These organizations control hundreds of companies. Like the top four private equity firms each have more than 1 million employees under control. And that's important because at the end of the day, they are the one calling the shots. So it is like super large employers, right?
Ludovic Falipu studies private equity at Oxford University.
Remember in the 1980s when we called investment bankers the masters of the universe? Is it fair to call these guys the hidden masters of the universe?
Yeah, but that would be a good name. I like it. They are in very important sector and, you know, they control hospitals, they control daycare center, care homes. They are everywhere. So they are a big deal.
And the money it's made, at least for its practitioners who charge large fees to the investors in their funds, are a very big deal too. Stephen Schwartzman of the Blackstone Group has built an estimated $33 billion personal fortune from private equity.
They're not rock stars. People wouldn't really know of them. However, they do make it to the news sometimes because they tend to have splendid birthday parties. Their 60th birthdays tend to be quite spectacular.
In 2007, Schwartzman celebrated his 60th birthday at New York's Park Avenue Armory, just after he'd completed a $40 billion takeover deal. 350 guests enjoyed an exclusive performance from Rod Stewart and Patti LaBelle. For some reason, the party included a 50-foot silkscreen model of Schwartzman's Manhattan apartment. The reported cost of it all, $3 million. But let's bring it back to what matters. Does private equity, this massive and growing sector of capitalism, deliver value for the people who work in the companies it acquires, for the investors in its funds, for the economy and society at large?
There have been some serious successes.
John Moulton is a veteran UK private equity practitioner.
A couple of the companies I invested in ended up in the FTSE 100, so really big successes. Some of them have made another great deal of money.
He's talking about Shire, a pharmaceutical company founded above a Hampshire off-license in 1986. It was sold for $62 billion to a Japanese drug giant in 2018. And Ashmore, a fund manager founded in 1999 and valued today at £1.7 billion. Moulton's private equity firms invested in both enterprises at early stages.
Why has it been successful? On average, it's turned out to be a better way of running companies than a public ownership or a private individual's ownership. That's not always true by any means, but it happens sufficiently often for private equity to have a big field to play.
But are these success stories the rule or exceptions? What happens on average?
How many people have you taught who've gone on to work in the industry, would you estimate roughly?
You know, it's got to be hundreds, I would think.
Professor Stephen Kaplan studies private equity at the University of Chicago and also trains those who go on to work in it.
Some of them have done very well. One of my former students is the founder of Partners Group, which is a very large global private equity firm in Europe.
And do they keep in touch with you?
Yeah, like try to keep in touch. And it's actually useful because it helps with my research. It helps with my teaching.
Kaplan says the idea that his former students would destroy companies for profit just doesn't make sense.
There's this view that what private equity does is they go in and they gut the company and then they sell it and make money by gutting the company. And that's really never been true, because if you gut the company and leave it as a shell, nobody's going to buy it. And that's sort of the real misconception. In order to make money in a transaction, you have to sell it to somebody. And unless the buyer is stupid, which buyers are not, you have to create some value. And so that's always been the case.
You know, all these big private equity firms, they're relatively small organizations, and maybe it's 100 people or something. And so if you are a junior employee at Blackstone, you know, it's not unreasonable that you'd have had lunch with Steve Schwarzman or been in a conference meeting room with him. The firms themselves are run in a tight-knit way.
This is Dan Rasmussen, who, when he left university in 2009, joined a big US private equity firm called Bain Capital.
Private equity is a deal business. It's an extension of the investment banking world. So what you'll find is that if you meet folks that work in private equity, because they're deal-oriented, they tend to be very bright and efficient and hardworking and very easy to get along with, right? There are people that are trying to negotiate and get deals done. And the type of people that get deals done tend to be trustworthy and smart and hardworking and nice. And so I think it's a really wonderful industry to work in. It's high octane. It's energetic. You've got to think of it as pretty similar to the typical Wall Street culture. It's an extension of the investment banks.
But despite getting his start in the industry, Rasmussen has become a critic. He argues the business model is not really about improving companies, but primarily about taking advantage of the opportunities of the exploding availability of cheap debt in recent decades.
Private equity firms will talk a lot about how they run companies better and how they're great owners. But I think to some extent that doesn't jive with logic, right? Why should a bunch of former investment bankers be magically wonderful at running companies? And it's hard to justify from an empirical point of view. What is easy to justify from an empirical view is that private equity uses debt, and they always have. Debt is a central part of how these deals get done. It tends to be about 50 or 60% of the money that's put up to buy these companies. So think of it like mortgages, right? They're buying, just like you'd buy your house, the mortgage. Every private equity deal, they're buying a company with, in effect, a mortgage. And I think, what are the implications of that? Well, one is, let's say you bought your house, the 50% mortgage, and your house goes up in value 10%. Right, your equity is worth 20% more. And so debt can magnify returns. The other thing that debt does is increases bankruptcy risk.
This is really important. What Rasmussen is saying is that by loading companies up with debt, private equity firms might make the returns larger on average, but at the cost of putting these firms at greater risk of going bust. Now, this is disputed. Other analysts, including Stephen Kaplan, insist that even after adjusting for the risks that debt brings, private equity earns better returns for investors than could be had from investing in comparable companies on the public stock market.
If you look at the returns to investors, and this is net of fees, since the mid-90s, every single year, you're beating the public markets by, say, 4% a year, and with about the same risk as far as we can measure it.
Yet there's no doubt that some firms do go bust after a period of private equity ownership.
All the efforts to save Debenhams, one of the biggest names on the British high street, have come to nothing, and 12,000 staff are now set to lose their jobs.
Debenhams went bust in 2020 with a £1 billion pile of debt, a legacy of its private equity ownership between 2003 and 2006. But the data on the likelihood of firms acquired by private equity going bust relative to other firms is also disputed. Yet what about the record of private equity in treating staff? Is the experience of those Clarks workers typical? A study of workers in UK care homes taken over by private equity firms found something similar to the Clarks story.
What the care workers were telling us is that there was an array of really negative impacts that came into place when the investment firms took over.
The research was led by Christine Corlett-Walker of the University of Surrey.
So, you know, a kind of broad range of exploitative practices for care staff, you know, reducing staff benefits. There was chronic understaffing of the care homes. They were expanding their job remits of care workers. They were reducing the staff to resident ratios, cutting corners on service delivery, on maintenance, food, sanitary products, as well as trying to kind of use various tactics to cover up mismanagement, from falsifying the paperwork, reducing the ability of staff to kind of communicate the problems that they were experiencing to the regulator, and also just a kind of a general feeling and understanding from the staff that financial gain and profit was the priority for these companies rather than high quality care being delivered to residents and also decent working conditions for staff.
It's all about slashing costs and making as much money as they can.
Terry Wright has worked for a care home in Liverpool since 2009. It was taken over by a private equity firm in 2015. He says one of the first changes was that staff on 12-hour shifts had pay deducted for their lunch hour, even when they remained on site and might be called to help a resident in an emergency. And that's not all.
I can safely say this, the workload increased. We used to have quite a lot more time to spend time chatting with the residents. A lot of your time was actually spent, well, when you did get time, reassuring people, comforting them, answering questions to pose to you, because an awful lot of our old and vulnerable are put in the care homes. And where we've got very attentive families, we've also got those because of business or whatever they're working at. Time's very important. So you become very much a very extended member of the family.
If one day you went into a care home, would you be thinking, I don't want to go into a private equity-owned care home?
Under no circumstances. They'd have to pull me in kicking, screaming and yelling. No, absolutely not.
One recent study found the mortality rate of patients in US care homes rose by 10% after they were taken over by private equity firms. Even private equity people like John Moulton question whether its practices are compatible with the care sector.
I've probably been involved in something of the order of 200 private equity deals of one form or another over my career. I've never really had a problem with a workforce expressing fear about the fact that we're private equity. It really is not a regular issue. It does occur, and there are some very difficult situations. The care homes are a very clear example. Care homes, their main cost are salary costs. Their main financing costs are the interest costs. The only way they can improve their profitability is to use less people or to pay them less. That's really, it's as crude and as difficult as that.
Though, is it maybe the specific nature of the care market that makes private equity's involvement inappropriate, rather than anything about private equity itself? Ludovic Fallapoo again.
Generally, it feels that when there is a sector where you do not have too much competition, it's going to be tricky to have private equity stepping in. Because if there's not too much competition, or if they can kill the competition, they're going to behave like a monopoly organization who wants to maximize profit. And we know from economic theory and intuition that this is the worst outcome that can happen.
Rather than private equity per se, could the problem be private sector involvement full stop in socially sensitive sectors, sectors with potentially vulnerable service users, and where competition is unviable for various reasons, like health, social care, and possibly education? So where does all this leave us? Is private equity a force for good or ill? The evidence to me is ambiguous. The performance of companies taken over by private equity is pretty fiercely contested by independent analysts. So too, the returns for investors in private equity, which, remember, today increasingly includes you and me via our pension funds. Quite a lot seems to hinge on technical questions of what benchmark is used to judge performance and what time period is used for evaluation. And the impact on workers, well, that rather depends too.
Private equity is just the ultimate form of capitalism. It's pure profit-seeking. And like capitalism, it can achieve amazing things. If you're obsessed by increasing profits, you will innovate more, you will train people more, you will be, you know, doing all kinds of amazing things that wouldn't have happened if you would have been under a communist regime. But some people may get hurt on the way.
Whether we want to tolerate that risk of harm for the sake of the possible wider economic benefits, that's arguably a social and political choice. But leaving aside those debates about the history, some think a reckoning for private equity is coming as interest rates rise sharply and debt becomes more expensive. And that as investors recognise this new reality, this could spell the end of this reign of private equity as the master of the financial universe. Dan Rasmussen again.
I think it's a classic bubble. You have almost total consensus among smart investors that private equity is amazing and even the best place to be. You have massive amounts of floating rate debt. And then third, you have really no way for people to get out of it once they get in. And you combine those three things and you had a classic three ingredients you need for a real problem.
Even private equity supporters like Stephen Kaplan sense a correction is coming because so many takeover deals were done in recent years at inflated prices.
So I think there's some reason for concern, and particularly the deals that were done in 2020 and 2021, because those were done when interest rates were very low and the prices paid were relatively high. So some of those businesses will come under a little pressure because the interest costs have gone up. And we'll see what happens.
Yet, to be fair, even the industry's biggest critics expect it to end with a whimper rather than the bang of a financial crisis.
I don't think that private equity has a great risk of blowing up in some spectacular way. I think the more likely outcome is that sort of these huge inevitable structural forces, which is valuations coming down and the cost of debt going up, and that sort of squeezes private equity in the middle, that the consequence of that is that people that put a lot of money in private equity just kind of get stuck there. And they're stuck there for longer than they thought they would be. And the amount of money they get out is less than they thought it would be. And there's just a sort of long trail of disappointment. Is that
the sound of quakers? By the way, what happened to Clark's shoes? The strike ended in October 2021 after Lion Rock agreed to come to terms with the union.
It was quite dramatic.
Adrian Axtell of the community union describes being summoned by the managers.
They immediately came in and said, look, we're taking the pay cut off the table.
Had his demeanour changed or was it the same as ever?
It has changed slightly in the fact that there was now a recognition that the route they'd taken clearly wasn't the correct route to take.
Lion Rock claims to have turned Clark's around financially since then, returning it to profit. The business was sold on to a Chinese firm, Viva China, last year. So did private equity, in the end, make a success of Clark's?
If 8 weeks of strike action is success, then I'd probably see life in a different way. They probably have turned that round. But again, they've managed to do that by virtue of working with their employees and the trade union. I think for some, it left a bit of taste in their mouth. They were still incredibly disappointed and angered that they'd been treated this way.
As you would imagine, we asked for interviews with Lion Rock about what happened with Clark's to get their side of the story, and, well, they never got back to us. Private equity, all grown up, but still seemingly as private as ever. Still, well, the hidden masters of the universe.